Good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, July 31st. The mayor is on vacation, so as president of the council, I will be presiding this morning. Carl, could you please call the roll?
Saltzman. Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Hales.
We have a couple of pre-agenda items to cover. We have 11 graduate students from Portland State University's Hatfield School of Government's Oregon Fellows Summer Program joining Council this morning as part of Job Shadow Day hosted by the Office of Management and Finance. These students are from all around the country and come to Oregon to participate in the program and complete a 10-week internship with public agencies throughout the Portland area. This year's students are focusing their studies in the area of public policy, public administration, conflict and dispute resolution, community and regional planning, social work, sustainable international development, and global leadership. Today's professionals from the fields of financial analysis, management analysis, program management, and project management have volunteered to serve as mentors to these students as part of the Office of Management and Finance Job Shadow Day. Each student will have the opportunity to spend time with at least two professionals, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And as part of this day's program, they are here to observe, Democracy in Action as part of this morning's council session. Welcome, interns and mentors. We also have a proclamation, which I will read on behalf of the mayor. Is anybody here for the Eat Local Day? Would you please come forward? Whereas the City of Portland is committed to supporting local growers, ranchers, fishers, and food and beverage producers, and whereas the City of Portland desires to act as a trusted partner to local companies and organizations, and whereas the City of Portland has assumed a national leadership role as a metrograrian city, and whereas the City of Portland supports the principles and benefits of a short, straight line between food and fork, and whereas the City of Portland believes that our local food tastes better, is better for our health, and is better for our local economy, and whereas the City of Portland appreciates the passion, dedication, and sacrifices demonstrated by local companies and organizations that come together to make this historic day possible, and whereas the City of Portland recognizes local choice produce market, the James Beard Public Market, and Organically Grown Company as the founding sponsors of this initiative. Now, therefore, Charlie Hales, the mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, does hereby proclaim July 31st to be Eat Local Day in Portland and encourages all residents to observe this day. Good morning. Would you please introduce yourself and just say a few words about this?
Sure, of course. My name is Don Sater. I'm one of the owners of Local Choice Produce Market, and I wanted to thank you, Commissioner Fritz, and the council for getting behind this initiative. There's a lot of important things going on in this city, and we think that encouraging citizens to support the local economy by eating local is one of them. And so we're just here to try to encourage people, including the city, to at least one day a year to read labels, to ask questions, to support the local farmers, to support the small artisan producers of this great city. They're trying so hard to make a difference. And so we appreciate you observing this day and encourage everyone here to, today at least, to eat locally grown and produced foods and beverages, and again, ask questions and talk to people and spread the word.
Terrific. Thank you very much for being here. Let me give you the proclamation.
Oh, thank you.
Carla, could you please read communication item 727?
Request of Thomas Edward Mullen to address council regarding injury on the job.
Yes.
You could just state your name for the record.
Yeah, my name is Thomas Edward Mullen.
Thank you.
Yes, I was hoping I was getting a rebuttal from you. I left a 12-page report for you guys to go over to find out when I got injured and why you guys are liable, and how you could go about getting me some funds so I can find myself. I'm lost within your system. I applied for the $240,000 that you gave for Caleb missing, and I'm missing also, so therefore I was hoping that you would have some kind of revolution for that this morning. And as it looked like we're going back to point one again, and with this 3 minutes, and there's no way I can explain all this in 3 minutes again, so this has seemed to be some kind of game with you guys. And I'm lost in this system in my whole world. I'm lost socially with no money, no nothing. And no one seemed to understand what I'm saying. And no one have took the time to understand it. I went all the way to the federal government, which is off in here from the Supreme Court, told me to exhaust all of my avenues. And I have exhausted all of my avenues. And I have flipped my flag upside down. And I'm asking at this time, have you people sent this report to Washington, D.C., as I requested, period. It is now in your court, not mine. It is your minute and a half. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen. If you'd like to stop upstairs to the mayor's office, his staff can help you.
Thank you.
Please read item 728.
Request of Mike Morin to address council regarding homelessness, environmental issues, community betterment, and living wage and equity.
Mr. Morin, please read item 729.
Request of Frank Selker to address council regarding building support for Forest Park.
Mr. Selker, great. Please state your name for the record, and then you have 3 minutes.
All right, thanks. Good morning. I'm Frank Selker, and I'm here to speak in support of opening Forest Park to mountain biking on trails. Portland is a great city for cycling. Cycling creates about 1,000 jobs and contributes about $100 million to our local economy. And mostly it's a great city for bicycling, but there's a gap. We have zero family-friendly bicycling trails in town that are off-road. And people want it. Three-quarters of the people who responded to the park survey wanted more bicycling in Forest Park. Two out of three favored sharing trails that were at alternating times from pedestrians. Two out of three favored building new trails for bicycles for off-road riding. And when Commissioner Fish's committee was meeting, the vast majority of letters were supporting more bicycling opportunities in Forest Park. In short, it appears that there's a strong majority of Portlanders that favor having some off-road cycling in town. However, there's a determined NIMBY opposition with the flames fanned by the Northwest newspaper. They offer a merry-go-round of the same objections that have been refuted and shown to be false, but they come around again and again, and they seem to think that any compromise will lead to a slippery slope. So they have sort of a zero tolerance. We share their claimed values, which are safety in the park and protecting the natural beauty of the park and enjoying the park. And we add another, which is to broaden support for the park throughout the city. Every proposal we've put forward has forwarded those values, although they've been distorted. Consider alternating use of trails. We proposed that, but we've identified sections of trail that are very little used during weekdays, and cities like Salt Lake City have designated trails for bicycles on certain days with great success. Cities like Tucson have seen crime reduced where they've allowed bikes on little-used trails. And we have never proposed mixing bikes and pedestrians willy-nilly. We have no desire to have safety issues, and there's no need to. Consider the Forest Park Management Plan. It provides clear guidance for adding trails and changing trail use. We have never proposed circumventing it, and there's no need to. It explicitly supports cycling and the number one reason for park visits today, which is fitness and exercise. But opponents try to find prohibitions in that document where none exist. Consider the park health. 40% has been reported to be damaged by invasive plants. Biologists tell us this is the true health crisis, but opponents would turn away money and volunteers if it means that we're going to have more users from around the city. And science finds that bikes are generally less, not more damaging to the park. Tire tracks are visible, but a National Parks Service study finds less erosion than pedestrians, and the studies have also found less disturbance to wildlife than pedestrians. Seattle, Minneapolis, Philadelphia, Phoenix, virtually every other large city in the country has cycling trails within minutes of downtown. By honoring the preference of all Portlanders, you can help business, broaden support for the parks, protect our reputation, reduce vehicle miles driven, and provide healthy alternatives for families in Portland. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Salker. Since I'm now the commissioner in charge of parks, let me tell you how this decision is going to be made, the process. This coming Monday, there is going to be a meeting at the Hoyt Arboretum in the evening. The details are on my website to review the project evaluation methodology. This is a review of all the applicable plans plus the ecological values in the park that will be used for reviewing all kinds of construction in the park, proposed construction.
Great.
So this meeting is to review that. It's not a public hearing, and we'll be taking input after the hearing. Mm-hmm. And then once that methodology has been adopted, then we'll be using that to evaluate whether or any construction projects in Forest Park move forward. So we do have a clear way of making this decision in an objective manner, which will give everybody opportunities to participate.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Please read item 730.
Request of Gary Fleming to address council regarding toxic plant overgrow situation.
Mr. Fleming?
He may be rescheduling, he thought.
Okay, thank you. And then 731.
Request of Sarah Hobbs to address council regarding cuts to Portland safety net and mental health services will hamper efforts to save lives at places like the Vista Bridge.
Good morning, Ms. Hobbs. Thank you for being here. Please give your name, and then you have 3 minutes.
My moral support. My name is Sarah Hobbs, and November of 2005, not for the sole fact that I did not want my kids' last memory of me being that I killed myself going over the rail at the Vista Bridge, we would not be having this discussion today. I want to thank you, Commissioner Novick, for taking the lead and taking the stand that you've had on the barriers at the bridge, but I have an ongoing concern. Research has shown that means reduction, which the barriers are, with good mental health follow-up, for every 10 people that are either stopped from attempting suicide or have an unsuccessful suicide attempt, 9 will not go on to try to commit suicide again. The barriers are an awesome first step, and my concern is we don't have the mental health services to help the 10 that are stopped by the barriers or people who talk them down. Research has shown for the majority it's an acute crisis with short-term care being about 3 months. But there will be 3 that will need long-term care. Those are people who have bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or severe issues with depression. I know for myself the issue that almost drove me to the bridge 8 years ago is still an issue. And in May, I became suicidal again, but this time ended up in the emergency room at OHSU. I recently talked, like 2 weeks ago, to my primary care doctor about getting counseling for the anxiety issues that I have. And she said that it could take 3 to 5 weeks for me to get an initial appointment. For somebody in crisis, that is way too long. I know we could send people down to the Cascadia Walking Clinic, but where do they send them? I'm not sure. There is an issue with the mental health safety net that needs to be addressed. I talked to the head of the Suicide Prevention Division for the state of Oregon. Portland is number 8 in the entire nation for suicide. Suicide prevention takes many forms. Means reduction, like the barriers at the bridge, education, but it takes mental health care. Commissioner Fritz, I understand you were a psychiatric nurse for many years before you came into politics. So I'm hoping I'm preaching to the preacher saying this to you, and I can count on you for support. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in to highlight this issue, which is one that I've been working on. The state actually did increase funding for mental health services significantly this past session, and I'm hoping that the Affordable Care Act will also help with that starting next year. In the meantime, I'm so glad you're here. I keep this in my drawer. Mm-hmm. This is the number for the Lines for Life, which is 24/7, 365. And folks can call there. 97% of the calls, they can spend an hour or more on the phone with you. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to wait the six weeks or so. I'll just read the number. It's 503-972-3456. Mm-hmm. They're trained volunteers, and they will take the time to work with you and others. Mm-hmm. And people who are concerned about people with mental illnesses can also call that number. The other thing I want to share with you, which I just found out yesterday, is that Multnomah County has funded the first aid for mental health program. So they're going to be training both government employees and citizens who are in contact with folks who are experiencing mental health crisis on how to help in the moment.
Good.
And with Commissioner Novick's leadership, there is a volunteer patrol that's also working.
Yes, that's Friends of the Vista Bridge,
yes,
which I'm a member.
So yes. I am encouraged that there is a lot more awareness of the challenge that has been kind of the silent killer for so long and so much stigma involved.
Yes.
I so appreciate that you came in to share your story and urge continued vigilance.
It's been hard because, like you've alluded to, is the stigma. And it's hard enough for people like me with mental illness because of the stigma to say we need help and then to be told you've got to wait 3 to 5 weeks to get your foot in the door for the help. It's like, you know, I've learned since I almost considered going over the rail at the Vista Bridge in November of 2005 to write a plan, and I got good communication with my doctors, but my concern is for the people who don't. You know, we've got a solution going at the bridge, but we've got other bridges. We've got a high rise, we've got other streets.
Thank you concern. Very much for coming in. Did Mr. Morin arrive? So that brings us to the end of the communications. Does anybody want to pull anything from consent?
Yes, we've had a request to pull 737.
737. Could you read the title of that, please?
Authorize contract and provide for payment for construction of the Portland Police Training Center remodel project at an estimated cost of $4,300,000.
And we'll hear that item at the end of the regular agenda. Any other requests to pull? Please call the roll on consent.
Mm-hmm. Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye. Thank you. And we have a time certain for 9:30, item 732.
732. Amend Northwest District Parking Management Plan to replace the Transportation Management Association with a stakeholder advisory group and adopt additional revisions.
Commissioner Novick.
Thank you, President Fritz. I don't often feel a kinship with Ronald Reagan, but today I think I feel remarkably like President Reagan must have felt on his first inauguration day when he got to celebrate the return of the hostages after Jimmy Carter had done all the work. When this council took office in January, we inherited what has been described to me as an uneasy truce in the Northwest parking wars, a war that perhaps was not so hot as the Korean War, but hotter than the fierce rivalry of the farmers and the cowmen from the classic Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, Oklahoma. The uneasy truce was a result of the plan that the council adopted in December. The uneasiness, I think, was reflected in the fact that the plan provided for a lengthy phasing period, which you might regard as a period of drawn-out disarmament. But since then, the mayor's office, led by Josh Alpert, engaged the various parties who came together, many of whom have been working on this issue for years and years and years, and agreed to certain modifications to the plan, and decided that actually we can move to full implementation in January of 2014. I want to thank the previous council. I want to thank Josh, the staff at PBOT, particularly Bill Hoffman, Rob Birchfield, and Marty Glick, and especially the stakeholders in the community who worked towards this resolution. And now I would like to ask Bill Hoffman from PBOT to come forward to describe the amendments. And by the way, I think that we should probably address both 732 and 733 in tandem. They're joint.
So if you'd like to read the title for 733, thank you.
Amend ordinance to remove Exhibit A relating to the phased implementation of the Northwest Parking Meter District and Area Permit Parking Program.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm Bill Hoffman, Office of Transportation. I should say I had an introduction prepared, but I believe my commissioner did a much better job with it. So I'm going to launch right into the changes so you can see what is proposed. The as Commissioner Novick said, the proposal is to implement the plan fully in January 2014. You can take a look at the map, and it gives you a good idea of what we're going to be doing. The solid blue is metered parking. The blue stripes is a hybrid area of metered parking and permit parking. So permit holders, and permit holders are all residents and all employees in the district, are eligible for permits. Permit holders can park for free in the striped area, whereas if you're a visitor to the area, you would use the pay station. And the stippled area, the blue dots, is the permit area. And I'll explain all these in a little more detail as we go forward. Perhaps the number one concern from the business community was what was originally proposed as a three-hour time stay. And the feeling amongst the businesses is that it's very important to be able to come into the district, park, and have enough time to avail the wide range of businesses and restaurants and services in the district. So this would change what was the adopted three-hour base time to a four-hour base time. There's a couple of exceptions to that, though, because there's also the realization that there needs to be some short-term parking as well as long-term parking. So although approximately 80% of the paid spaces on 23rd and 21st are going to be long-term four-hour parking, approximately 20% of the spaces will be two-hour parking. So we'll have a mix of long-term and medium-term parking. Within the non-metered permit area, we're providing for short-term parking one 30-minute space on every block face. And this is important primarily to residents who may not be able to find a parking space close to their house, but will be able to have a short-term parking on each block face so they can do loading, unloading. We're also proposing to extend paid parking from its current boundary proposed at Pettigrove, taking it now to Northwest Vaughan. And the picture on the right sort of illustrates why we're doing that. Since the time we started the most recent parking plan effort, there has just been a huge influx of new development in the northern end of the district, and that's only going to increase as the Conway site develops. A couple of changes to the permit parking plan. One is making clear through this action that we're only implementing the permit program to Northwest 25th. Now, the permit program is primarily in place to deter commuter parkers. And these are folks who are perhaps working downtown, working in the Pearl District, parking in Northwest, where it's previously been free to park all day, and either hopping on public transportation or, in the case of the Pearl, just walking down to their jobs in the Pearl. So the permit district is designed to address that, to mitigate against that, but there are parts of the Northwest District that are not impacted by commuter parkers. And we believe the line is approximately at 25th. So We will not implement the program west of 25th until there's a need. And as there's a need, by request, we can go in and expand that area. There was also concern that even with the four-hour time stays, that there are some very legitimate uses that need to extend beyond 4 hours. So we're, through this action, we are committing to make day pass permits available, and it's at a very moderate cost to businesses, institutions, medical facilities that, for whatever reason, need to have longer time stays.
So can you stay on that for a second?
Yes.
Because we got a lot of testimony last December on that question. So you're going to go to 100% on that?
Yes.
And then over time look to bring it down?
Yes.
And I'm just curious, someone who is, say, volunteering in the school.
Yes.
Who parks, runs in and gets a permit and comes out, could very well find a ticket. So how do we deal with the sort of grace period between parking and getting the ticket and getting the
There are probably a couple of ways to do it. The easiest would be just to have a 30-minute non-metered zone for short-term parking, similar to what we're doing in the rest of the permit area. So someone could park there for a short term, run in, get their permit, and come out and park. Event day overlay.
Bill, I guess before you leave, so what is the reasoning behind allowing meters to be plugged? I mean, I thought that was something that we looked down, frowned upon and throughout the city, plugging meters.
One advantage of meters, one important reason for meters is to encourage turnover. And in most districts, turnover is perceived, as most business districts, turnover is perceived as advantageous. You want someone to park, be able to park, do their business, and then vacate that parking space for the next customer. The Northwest District uses a different model. And and this is not per se a PDOT best practice, but it's a very strongly held feeling amongst the business community that long-term parking is advantageous. And so the ability to plug the meter is in alignment with that. I know that Pat Fiedler and other representatives of the business community are here today, and that's probably a good question to address to them. From our point of view, although it doesn't meet best practices as we understand it, we're very sensitive to the awareness that businesses often know what's best for them. And so in this case, we'll put it in place. If it doesn't work, I think the businesses will be the first to raise their hands and say, please look at this.
So, yeah, I'll wait for that testimony, but I guess I'm thinking, I know what they're thinking, which is, you know, people want to come and enjoy lots of things, great things in Northwest Portland, but I also see the potential, notwithstanding having permits, that people can just, you know, people who work there or have a visitor can just stay in a space for an entire 8 hours.
Right. It takes some work because you have to come back and at least plug the meter.
Right.
And it takes some money because you're paying to do that. But absolutely right. I mean, I think that we have used the analogy before that what we're doing right now is putting the mechanisms in place for parking management. So we have the tools in place. We have the paid parking. We have a permit program. We're going to have a demand management program in place. But all of that over time, the gearing is very loose right now. Mm-hmm. So over time, the gearing can adjust as we learn and experience. And so I think we have to look at this as a evolutionary process of parking management in the district. And this is really the beginning.
Okay. Thanks.
Event day overlay. Now, some have argued, and the picture is on the right, some have argued that our event day signage is confusing.
Mr. Hoffman, I just have to ask, has anybody argued that they're not?
Actually, Ramon, do you want to? No, I mean, it clearly is confusing, and we have struggled with this. The answer, of course, is to move from signage to pay stations. And the reason is that with pay stations, the communication in terms of hours can happen at the pay station. And the pay stations for event days, which are relatively few in the calendar year, can be programmed into the pay station. So you don't need this signage. There will be some signage that will indicate that it's an event overlay district, an event district, and that you need to pay attention to the pay station for time restrictions. But beyond that, we're going to move away from the confusing signage.
You know, there's just two comments on that. One is that for some of us whose eyesight is not that great, reading the information on the pay stations is a challenge. So just to think about that, particularly for older adults and for people who will be reading it at night, I find it very challenging to read it. So I just offer that. And second, one of the virtues of a sign, even one as confusing as this one, is that once you master that sign as you're driving around, you know that this is a street you can or can't park in. And so a byproduct of this is that after you've gone through all the effort to find a spot, park in a congested area, get over to the pay station, you learn that that's not the, you know, you can't afford it or it's not the right place. So I just, I'm concerned we may be substituting one level of confusion for another set of challenges. But again, as you said, this is an evolutionary process.
I think it's the nature of the parking business, but hopefully it's a lesser of evils.
What I would urge you to do on the machine is just make it as clear as possible, because it is, I find, difficult to read the payment.
Transportation Management Association, TMA, the model that this was originally built on was the Lloyd District model. And in the Lloyd District, the TMA is relatively autonomous. They function as an independent board, and they have great discretion over parking decisions in that district. They still need to abide by all the city's codes and policies, but they have a certain degree of independence in terms of managing parking and transportation in that district, and it works very successfully. There was some concern that applying that model to the Northwest District at this point would not be the best to do, and that the this is somewhat a result of the extreme difficulty that Northwest has in terms of the variety of uses, the very high concentration of residential, the high concentration of commercial business office uses. And it was felt by all parties that it would be best if, rather than having a TMA structure, we used a stakeholder advisory group structure with the authority to make decisions and the leadership to make decisions coming from the Office of Transportation, the director of the Office of Transportation, and the commissioner in charge. So we're making that change in this set of changes.
Bill, how will prospective SAG members be selected? Will there be a process where people will self-nominate, or is the commissioner in charge looking for nominations from his colleagues, or what? How do you intend that process to work?
I think we could let Commissioner Novick answer that, but I would just suggest that we haven't crossed that bridge yet. Typically, the appointments are made by the commissioner. I think it's a high enough. It's an important that this committee be endorsed at that level. We actually put out applications for the TMA some time ago. We have a number of people who have expressed interest, but we will start those discussions in the next phase, which follows this meeting.
And Commissioner, I'll certainly be pleased to listen to suggestions from my colleagues.
And is there any suggestion of what the makeup of the committee would be in terms of stakeholder interest groups?
We really haven't broached that, but I think typical of our committees, we want it to be as representative as possible. It also needs to be a group that is, and of course many are just committed to the betterment of that district and parking in the district. And I think there are many people who expressed interest initially who I believe will have continued interest.
Thank you. And are you about to discuss the revenue sharing?
I didn't have the revenue sharing in the PowerPoint, but we could discuss that if you like.
Yes, because previously the TMA was set, the Transportation Management Association was set up to manage half of the revenue from the meters.
Yes.
What's the proposal for the stakeholder advisory group and the revenues?
The city has a policy of sharing revenue with parking districts, meter districts, paid parking districts, and it is 51% of those revenues stay in the district. Now, it's important to know that the revenues stay in the district for transportation purposes. They are it is transportation money. It's used for transportation purposes, and those could be for demand management, whether it's underwriting the cost of buses or providing better pedestrian access to transit. So there's a variety of uses that are possible. It stays in the district. In this case, the Stakeholder Advisory Committee will act as an advisory committee to the Office of Transportation and the Commissioner in Charge of Transportation.
Thank you.
Just one follow-up on that. You said that you hope to have this operational January of 2014. Do you have a guesstimate in year one of what the net revenues would be under this plan?
Let me can check with my advisor sitting in the audience. I believe last time we looked, and someone behind me can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the revenues were the gross revenues were I think close to $2 million a year. I believe that's changed. The mix of meters is changing now.
Plus or minus $2 million gross, and then net revenues would be
net of the Bureau's
expenses.
Yeah. Here's your reinforcement.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Just a ballpark. I'm not looking to pin you down on a specific number. We're looking for the range.
Yeah, so Marnie Glick, Bureau of Transportation. So we are assuming at full implementation there would be about $3.5 million in revenue. We assume that in the first year there will not be any net meter revenue. Net meter revenue is what we share. So starting in the next fiscal year, there would be a little bit less than, I think, like $700,000 or $800,000. That would be the...
And is your projection based on the fact that you have some initial startup costs, including capital costs...
Yes.
...that eat up the revenue? And
yes.
Thank you. Okay. We're almost at the end. One of the new ideas that came out of this most recent iteration of process is the idea that over time we can reduce the percentage of employee permits from an aggregated 100%, which is where we're starting, to 85% within 5 years of implementation. Now, the only way we'll be able to reduce the demand for employee parking permits is if we actively engage in a demand management program. So one of the recommendations coming out of this is to establish a demand management program and work on reducing the number of single occupancy vehicles that are coming into the district on a daily basis with employees. Now, the other side of that coin, though, is that a demand management program can be very effective as well, reducing the number of single occupancy trips for residents. So it will be a program that will be geared towards both employees and residents with the idea of reducing the demand. And of course, this is extraordinarily important because the availability of on-street parking is finite and the demand for on-street parking continues to grow. So we will never be in a position to provide an adequate number of on-street spaces. Building off-street spaces in the district is extraordinarily difficult, and so I believe that puts quite a bit of pressure on demand management, and we're prepared to work with the district in that area.
Bill, can you elaborate a little bit on what the elements of a demand management program can be?
Yeah, we can look at other examples. It's a range of things. It can be everything from just coaching, helping going into businesses, and really helping folks understand what the bike routes are, how you can be a safe bike commuter so as to encourage biking. It could be things like encouraging provisions with new development for showering locker facilities for bike commuters or bike racks. On the transit end, other areas of the city, Lloyd District in particular, provide subsidies for employees to use transit so as to underwrite the cost of transit use. So on the one hand, you have the cost of parking going up, the cost of transit use going down. It can be pedestrian to access improvements, simple things like better lighting at bus stops, better crosswalks. These are all things that can encourage people to walk, bike, or use public transportation. For any district, it needs to be designed to the unique needs of those districts, and that's one of the things we'll work with and we'll have really look to the stakeholder committee to help guide.
So demand management isn't code for raising parking rates at the meeting.
Oh, I forgot that. It typically isn't, but you know, one way, if and this isn't so much getting people out of the single occupancy vehicles, but what we look for is about 20% of our parking spaces to be available at any given time. If in fact you're not hitting that number, if in fact you have fewer than 80% available, then one way to regulate that is to raise rates. And that's it's a best practice technique. It's one that we're not employing right now and we don't anticipate, but it's certainly a technique that's used.
So, you know, this council just last week had quite a robust discussion about the equity of the arts tax and whether it should become more progressive. I have the same concern about the equity of just arbitrarily raising parking rates. I mean, you could easily spend what you pay for the arts tax, $35, in plugging a meter for 8 hours.
Right.
And there's a certain equity issue associated with that. If we're just trying to wean out those who can least afford it, I have a problem with that.
Right.
And also, this council has had a policy, and I hope this is still in place, and I want a reaffirmation of that, that the city council approves any and all changes to parking meter rates. Is that your understanding?
I believe that's my understanding as well.
Any changes that the demand management group
might suggest
with respect to raising rates has to be approved by the city council, signed off by the city council.
Right, of course. Okay. And honestly, when we think about a demand management program right now, we're not thinking about rates. We're really thinking about, you might say rates are the stick. I think demand management is really looking at the carrots.
Bill, let me just piggyback off that for a second. I'm recalling some testimony we had in December from an animal hospital, some schools, some other nonprofits in the district that were very concerned about the proposed 85% cap on these permits from the get-go. So I understand the logic of starting at 100% and then coming down. My question is the goal to get to 85%, and is that binding policy? I mean, is this aspirational, or are we committing to getting to 85% over a period of time?
This is completely aspirational.
So, I mean, I guess in the spirit of how we're doing this, I don't have a problem with it being aspirational, but I do think the council is going to want to watch that carefully. And the reality is we also heard testimony from people that said that with the kinds of benefits they're offering their employees now, they are at 85%.
Yes.
And they hope to improve on that. So maybe one of the messages we want to send is that we're patient and we'd like to give the district time to get to an aspirational goal. But it doesn't preclude the council from coming in at some point and saying really 85% is the cap. You've had a few years, time to get there. But 100% is not going to be locked in perpetuity.
I'll share with you the Central East Side. Central East Side, which was also adopted recently and put in place recently, has 100% employee permits. They have a transportation management steering committee right now. That group is now looking at reducing that 100% to something lower for employees because they realize that 100% is a license to hunt. It's a license to go out and find a space. It doesn't assure a space. And so they're now looking at the reality that maybe they shot a little too high. I personally believe that that the goal is appropriate right now. and putting the program in place is the right thing to do. And over time, the collective wisdom of the stakeholders will hit on the right formula. And that's where we're starting.
And by the way, the employee permits are non-transferable. Is that correct?
That's correct. Well, I don't know if that's correct or not. Let me ask Marnie to comment on that.
They are transferable.
So they are transferable from one business to another?
No, from one employee.
But with it, so once an employer, be it a nonprofit, a school, a business, whatever, seeks an allocation, they can't be transferred to another entity.
They don't need to be, since any entity can get 100%.
Right. Okay. Good point. Good point. There's a certain mathematical logic that.
Well, that was.
So even Joe Walsh, a close student of our work, gets that one. So I would say
That will be a challenge, though, overall, when you start to try to decrease the overall percentage, that some businesses may need 100% and others not.
That's right, and that's why we say aggregate.
And I personally would suggest that until transit out of Northwest in the evening is to all parts of the city is better, that it would be very difficult to tell employees who are coming from elsewhere to work in the evening shift that they're out of luck, they can't drive. I have a couple of questions on the parking, on the meters.
Yes.
When we discussed it in November, the suggestion was that the price would be less than the rest of the city. Is the current proposal to make it the same as the regular rate all over the city?
I think what was adopted was the regular rate. I think in the Central East Side, we used a lesser rate. We indexed that to the Lloyd District. But in Northwest, we're indexing it to the downtown Central City.
Thank you. And then what are the hours of both the meters and the permit district?
I'm going to call up Marnie just so we get it right.
So the hours of the meters are 9 to 7, Monday through Saturday.
And the permit district is all time, although it's not. It's only in enforcement hours.
So that would be 9 to
yes.
7, too? Okay, thank you.
We have one more slide. Okay, so we're doing a couple of experimental things here. One is the four-hour base time stay. The other is the plugging of meters, and the other is the goal of reducing employee permits. There was a request from our stakeholders that we just go back and look at these and question: is it working the way we want it to work? So, in a year, we will pose that question, and we may bring some data to the table to help answer that question. But the idea is, and I think this is very consistent with our philosophy of managing parking in the district, is that these are it's very alive, it's very dynamic, and at every point we need to ask, is it working, is it performing to meet the goals of the district? And so this is explicitly says we're going to look at these three things, which we will, but we'll be looking and really trying to monitor the effectiveness of all the tools that are in place in the district. And that's the end of the presentation. I know that there are some folks representing the Nob Hill Business Association and the Northwest District Association and other affiliated businesses in the area that would like to offer testimony.
And with that, Commissioner, I'd like to ask Christine White, Pat Fiedler, and Tavo Cruz specifically to come up and offer their perspectives. Thank you, Bill and Marnie.
Morning.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Gustavo Cruz, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the Northwest District Association, or the NWDA. I'm the chair of its ad hoc parking committee and a lifelong resident of Northwest Portland. First, we would like to thank Mayor Hales, the commissioners, city staff members, including Josh Alpert, Bill Hoffman, Rob Birchfield, and Marnie Glick, the Nob Hill Business Association, and numerous other business representatives and neighborhood residents who provided input into the proposed amendments to the parking plan. We appreciate the time and effort that everyone expended to bring us here today. It is also our pleasure to testify alongside representatives of the business community, although we continue to have some concerns regarding the plan, as do our friends in the business community. It is clearly a breakthrough for us to be here together to express our overall support. We hope that this will be the beginning of a more collaborative approach to neighborhood parking issues. When our board of directors reviewed the proposed amendments, their primary concerns were the effectiveness of the four-hour time stay period, the ability to plug the parking meters, and the goal of reducing employee permits from 100% to 85%. As a compromise, our board suggested, and the current amendments now provide for, an interim review of these three issues after 1 year. We feel this is exactly the kind of task that the new stakeholder advisory group should undertake. The Northwest Parking Plan should be a dynamic, evolving plan that is continually improved to benefit everyone in the neighborhood. The amended plan will use permits, meters, shared parking arrangements, and other targeted efforts to make more efficient use of a scarce public resource. These measures will reduce the tendency of commuters to use Northwest Portland as a park and ride location, and should improve parking availability for businesses, residents, and visitors. The demand management portion of the plan will encourage the use of alternative transportation, which should further reduce the pressure on on-street parking. We hope that the successful implementation of this plan will serve as a model for other neighborhoods and will demonstrate the city's commitment to addressing on-street parking needs. We also encourage the city to continue its review of the parking minimums issue for new developments, as this has a direct impact on the availability of on-street parking. Finally, we believe that the amended parking plan will improve livability in the neighborhood and will serve as well as residential density and commercial activity continue to increase in the coming years. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Christy White. I represent several businesses in the district, including Singer Properties and Cinema 21. At the end of last year, it was less an uneasy truce and more of a flawed plan in our view and a flawed process. We had no trust or communication between the stakeholders. We had posturing instead of honest discussions between us about our diverse needs. Under the strong leadership of PBOT, Rob Birchfield, and Bill Hoffman, we now have a plan that does respond to all of our diverse needs. Most importantly, this planning effort before you allowed NWDA, Nob Hill, and others to talk with each other candidly, to build back trust, and to listen to each other's real needs in the district. For these reasons, like Tavo said, the businesses have a plan we can live with. We believe it protects the business vitality through appropriate meter locations and restrictions, and it protects residential livability through permits and short-term parking in the residential areas. Did we get everything we need? No. The plan doesn't solve for a necessary increase in off-street parking. The code currently provides for this parking, and as Mr. Hoffman said, that's on paper, but it's been very difficult to build. The plan does, however, promise to engage in that work in the near term, to look at ways we can make it easier to fulfill that moderate supply. With our newly discovered truce and this on-street parking plan, we feel more confident that we can continue to have these productive discussions amongst us on all of these issues. I want to thank again Rob Birchfield, Commissioner Novak, Bill Hoffman, the Mayor's Office, NWDA, and Nob Hill for arriving here together. And in closing, amen.
Good morning. My name is Pat Fiedler, and I'm the president of the Nob Hill Business Association. Tavo and Christy have done a wonderful job describing what we've had to come to at this point. And this goes back years and years. And I'm very, very pleased today to say that the Nob Hill Business Association does support the plan with the amendments. We understand that there does need to be a review. We also understand that, I want to make it perfectly clear, when we're talking about the 100% and the 85% of the employee permits, that would be an aggregate figure, and I hope you do understand that. So the other, at this point, I want to thank everyone who has taken part. You as the commissioners who have listened to us, the mayor's office, and, of course, the Transportation Bureau. Right now, Tavo and his group have done so much in compromising with us. I know the 4 hours does sound to them like perhaps that won't work. The plugging of the meters, also I know they're concerned about. But I wanted to tell you that the employees are not going to be plugging meters at $1.60 an hour, so I don't think that's going to be a concern, Commissioner Fish. So I don't want to take a lot of more time because I do feel that Christy and Tavo have stated to you exactly how we feel about this. We are more than willing to sit down now at this moment where we really do trust each other. And what we have is one common goal. We have a wonderful, wonderful area in Knob Hill, not only for the residents and not only for the businesses, but the people who come down to enjoy that area. It's full of energy. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. We don't want to change that. We want to keep that. And so that's why it's very important that this parking issue has finally come to some kind of a moment where we can all move forward. And so I thank you for your time.
And Pat, why don't you tell us what business you run?
What is this I'm with? Child's Play, the little toy store. And actually, we're the oldest retail business on the street.
And I just want to publicly thank you for bailing me out on Christmas Eve.
Glad to do it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all of your work and your patience.
End of the assigned testimony. Do we have a sign up?
We do. We have 6 people signed up. The first 3, please come on up, are Ralph W. House, Phil Sullinger, and Judy Kafori.
Good morning. Please state your name for the record at the beginning of your testimony, and you'll each have 3 minutes.
My name is Ralph W. House. I am the CFO for iHealth Northwest. You know, and you got bailed out on Christmas Eve. I'm thinking maybe we could design some eyeglasses that would help you read those new meters that are going to be giving the information you need.
I'm all game.
All right. Well, we as a business were, of course, very concerned with the prior plan, but and we're actually legitimately considering what our options were as far as potentially moving out of Northwest. Wanted to thank the commission for the recent approach to this and for the changes that were made, which now we feel very hopeful that we'll be able to stay there. One of the problems for us was employee parking, and it's nice to see that that's been resolved as well. So, again, a great appreciation for the recent approach to it and for the cooperation of the residents as well that makes it possible for us to stay in business there.
All right. Good morning. My name is Phil Sellinger. I live on 2466 Northwest Thurman Street, and I am serving as board president of the Northwest District Association. And in that role, I'd like to briefly supplement the comments of the panelist before us here. As you know, the parking needs within Northwest Portland are diverse, with institutions, businesses, and residents having unique perspectives on how parking might best be managed. We have been on a long road to get to the hard-earned consensus that is being presented to you today. Views within the NWDA are also diverse. But the Board of Directors has concluded that this plan, with amendments, represents the best hope for addressing the diverse on-street parking needs of the community. The NWDA indeed supports this plan with amendments and looks forward to working with other neighborhood interests and the city in continuing to reduce our automobile dependence and manage both traffic and parking in our urban setting. We appreciate the partnership and the patience of the business community, and we also applaud the good work of city staff and of council in bringing the refined plan to this point of consideration and hopeful adoption. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Judy Kafori, and I'm the managing director of Northwest Children's Theater and School, which is located in the Northwest Neighborhood Cultural Center right there at Northwest Everett, between 19th and Everett. When I heard that everybody had finally come to a very good compromise on the parking plan, I was really pleased because I bring in over 75,000 people into Northwest Portland, half of whom are children, to attend our productions or go to our classes or other events. Off-street parking is very important for my patrons, and they need to have at least 4 hours in order to come and see a show, do a class. Once it's the show is over, to meet the actors, then they go out into the neighborhood and they eat in the restaurants and they shop in the businesses, and so it's a huge win-win for everybody involved. So I thank everybody who worked on this for as long as they have. You have helped save the business of Northwest Children's Theater and School, and I like to think we are one of the great cultural programs in Portland. Thank you.
Thank you very much.